imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky.
Welcome to the show. Hi, this is Bobby Elias. Imagine if we could have a better world. The name of this show is Let's Create a Better World. Our other theme is Healthy Aging. And we talk about a lot of subjects on this show. Today we're going to have Howard Vlieger. He is a speaker. He is a third-generation family farmer who's got some great studies on exposing what's really going on in the genetically engineered field. So, and at towards the end of the show, for a few minutes, we're going to have a gentleman come to make an announcement about a run from California going back, all the way back east. I just found out about this, so he's going to be on for a short while to give information about this run. It's to make awareness on the GMO issue. All over the country. So this is great. I'm excited. Now, for our show, you can also hear our show on the archives if you can't get it right away. And besides the internet or a laptop or computer, you can also hear the show on your phone. I'll give you a number that you can call, and for friends of yours, or if you're busy and aren't near one, you can call this number, area 619-550-0869, and you can hear the show. If you like our show, please rate us on iTunes. We're going to have some great shows in the next few weeks. Next week, we're going to talk about reflexology with a master reflexologist. The following weeks, we're going to have End All Wars, a new committee that I'm on. About 21 people, last I heard, are on this committee. These are all great, great anti-war activists for years and people with great ideas and great, there's going to be some great events next year. We'll talk about that. And we also do a lot on health and aging. We talk about the whole body, mind, spirit thing with new and innovative guests. All right, let's get to our first guest today. His name is Howard Vlieger. He is a third generation family farmer. He's a speaker. He's got a lot of things he's doing. Welcome to the show, Howard.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'd like you to go ahead and tell our people some more things about what you do and how you got into this.
Well, as you said, I'm a family farmer, and I call myself a student of the soil. In 1989, we began using alternative farming methods on our farm. Today, it's referred to as biological farming. In 1992, I started offering what we had learned, the advice and product information, to others that were interested, and I have been privileged to work with crop and livestock family farming operations all across the United States and Canada. So
wow,
it's been an enjoyable education, and we continue to learn more every day.
That's fabulous. If you could start out by, we have a lot of new people that have come on the last few weeks. Our show is growing. The station is growing fast. For people that don't know a lot about genetically engineered foods, could you give them a little quick orientation of how and why what the Monsanto people are doing to our food?
Well, genetically engineered crops or genetically modified organisms, they're one and the same, are developed in the laboratory, where they take DNA from one species and insert it into another species for a specific characteristic that they want in the plant. Many of the events or changes that are made to the plants are herbicide tolerance is the number one event. 85%+ of the crops that have been genetically modified are tolerant to one or more herbicides. The primary herbicide that they are genetically altered to withstand is a glyphosate-based herbicide. Glyphosate is the active chemical ingredient in Roundup herbicide, which is designed to basically kill everything it touches. There are also genetically engineered crops that are designed to have an insecticide present in the crop. So every cell of that plant becomes an insecticide, and if a insect or a pest feeds on it, it will kill that insect. Those are the two primary genetically engineered type crops at this point in time. The industry talks about improving nutrition content of the crop and or improving yield, but they have not been successful in bringing those products to market and proving it.
Wow. For our listeners, I'm speaking to Howard Ligger. He is a speaker, a third-generation family farmer, and is really involved in the studies and the deep end of what's really going on with genetically engineered foods. Things are getting worse and worse. Howard, you've been working a lot on this pig study. Could you tell our listeners about that? Take your time. This is an enormous thing you're doing.
Well, in June of 2013, the pig study, as you referred to it, was published in the Journal of Organic Systems, a scientific journal. And what we did was take pigs right from their mother. We had 84 in each group, so we had high numbers, which gave us a very strong statistical analysis base to work from as far as scientific perspective was concerned. When they were weaned from their mothers, 84 of them went on conventional, non-GMO corn and soybean meal, and 84 of them went on genetically engineered corn and soybean meal. And they were fed that their entire lifetime, those respective rations. Everything was the same with the exception of the conventional corn and soy and the GMO corn and soy. Everything else was the same. They were fed that until the day they went to the harvest facility when they were processed for the meat in the animal. At the harvest facility, all of the viscera or innards of the animals were collected. They were all identified as to which one they came from. And we had two very well-trained, licensed, and practicing veterinaries who had a lot of experience with hogs do a complete autopsy on all of the organs of all the animals. The organs were all inspected, the organs were all weighed, and everything was recorded in a consistent manner. And the results, the two significant statistical findings of that study were, number one, the female pigs that were fed the genetically engineered grain, the weight of their utera was 25% heavier than that of the conventional grain-fed female pigs. This was, we didn't do follow-up work on the utera itself because this was not necessarily something we expected to find was that increased weight, but that, as Dr. Carmen said, the increased utera weight could indicate a number of different potential adverse effects to the health of the reproductive system of that animal. And prior to doing this study, we had witnessed both moderate and extreme cases of infertility issues in animals that were consuming genetically engineered crops. The second significant statistical finding from a scientific standpoint was the health of the stomachs, or the lack of the health of the stomachs. The GM-fed pigs were 2.6 times more likely to have severe inflammation in their stomachs. When we broke that down by male and female, the males were 4 times or 400% more likely to have the severe inflammation in their stomachs, and the females were 220 times more likely to have this severe inflammation. This was consistent with the anecdotal findings that we were seeing prior to conducting the study, that when the animals were fed genetically engineered grain, whether it was corn or soy or both, there was a wide variety of digestive problems for those animals. Whether it was ileitis, salmonella, or bloody bowel, it was very consistent that those problems would prevail when the GM grain was in the ration versus the problem not being there when the non-GM grain was in the ration for the animals. So those were the two statistical scientific findings of the study.
That's great, Howard. I want to remind our listeners that Howard Vigor is a speaker. He's all over the country speaking. I met Howard in October of 2012 in Los Angeles when I was running a Gary Null health support meeting. He came and spoke, and I believe you had a slideshow, didn't you, at that meeting? There's a lot of things going on all over the country. We're starting to win more and more states. And I want our listeners to know that you have to be careful of what you eat. The average supermarket, 85 to 90% of all the foods in there are genetically engineered. Can you speak to that issue a little bit about the foods that are all over the place? And we have a lady just doing a boycott, and we're going to speak on that later. But let's talk about what's going on with the foods that are in the markets and why people should not eat those foods.
Well, I guess I'd like to finish one thing on the study that wasn't a scientific finding.
Go ahead. Sure, take your time, Howard.
For a long time prior to conducting the study, we were witnessing different problems in the health of livestock that was consuming the GMO grain. Excuse me. And I was calling it circumstantial or coincidental. Well, I'm privileged to work with a host of very, very qualified PhD scientists and researchers in different fields from all around the world. And one of my PhD friends told me, when I explained the coincidences that we were seeing in the ill animal health relative to GM grain in the feed, she properly informed me that what we were seeing was not coincidence, it was anecdotal information. When we had the GM grain in the problem, the problem was there. Or had the GM grain in the ration, excuse me, the problem was there. When we took it away, the problem went away. So that couldn't be identified as scientific because you didn't have the parameters set up. So all of those problems were anecdotal. We had two very, very strong anecdotal findings in our study, which we were not allowed to put in the paper because it wasn't scientific, but we weren't prepared to see what we found in some cases, and this was one of the things. There was an extreme change in the behavior of the animals that were eating the GMO feed. We weighed these animals every week. We had to do that to monitor the health of the animal, that they were growing properly. When the pigs got older, we had a simple maze that they would run through and get on a scale, take their turn and get on the scale. And then after they got off the scale, they'd get to run around and play, in essence, from the normal surroundings that they would live in on a day-to-day time period. Well, the non-GM fed pigs, this was fun for them. Pigs are absolutely creatures of habit. They got in this routine. As soon as they would enter the maze, they'd go through it in an efficient manner. And once they had gotten off the scale, then they'd run around and kick up their heels. The GM-fed pigs could not complete this simple task without difficulty. It was, again, a very, very simple maze. As soon as we got them to the point of being in a modestly confined environment, they would start getting confused and they'd start fighting with one another. And this happened consistently every time. And when those GM-fed animals were back in their normal surroundings, in the environment that they lived in every day, they never exhibited a level of contentment. There was always a level of listlessness and nervousness present among them pigs. They just were never content. And again, because we did not anticipate this, we didn't have the protocol structured in a fashion to record this information and be able to verify it from a scientific standpoint. I agree with the need for science in verification on the safety of anything new or novel into our food supply. But the thing that science also needs to do is be aware of these warning signs, which are absolutely identified as this anecdotal information. When I look at what happened in this feeding study with the pigs and the GM-fed animals and compare that to what's going on with the behavioral issues and the varying illnesses in the children in our country, I see a very concerning parallel. All of the behavioral problems that we're witnessing in the children and the young adults, and I've been fortunate to speak to many, many people as I travel across the country and share this information. And when I talk to the medical doctors or the mothers and the fathers who have recognized the dangers of the GM foods, and they get the GMOs out of the diet of their children, and in some cases go to a completely organic diet for the food of the family. This comment is consistent that there is from a moderate to a drastic improvement in the behavior of the children, the young adults, and even some of the other family members. In my mind, this is something that is being severely overlooked in the, the industry has provided zero evidence of safety, and the regulatory agencies, the FDA, zero evidence of safety relative to genetically engineered crops. They don't require any long-term testing or safety testing. This is a huge concern for what's affecting the future generations of our country.
That's very true. You know, I've heard that in Argentina, babies and people are coming out getting very sick. There's all kinds of horror stories that I'd rather not say right now. For our listeners, of how people are being deformed and getting sick from all the terrible, because Argentina was one of the first countries south of the United States that was hit with a lot of genetically engineered foods. Well, continue with the study. That's interesting. I didn't mean to get you off track on the other question.
Well, and that was the other thing I wanted to mention, but your point about what's going on in South America brings us to another point that really needs to be brought up. Because these crops are genetically engineered to tolerate glyphosate-based herbicides, which in the early days of the farmers using them, made life simpler and easier for them as far as controlling weeds. And in the very early days, there was also a slight reduction in the amount of herbicide that was used. But because the technology was abused and the promotion of this technology was put forth by the developers of it that says, well, yeah, you don't have to worry about weed resistance. We'll manage that for you. Well, farmers used the same mode of action in the herbicide with the glyphosate-based products year after year after year in multiple crops. Well, the weeds are going to develop a resistance to any mode of action that you have, but developing resistance and turning into a super weed are two different things. In the case of glyphosate-resistant weeds, the super weed aspect is present more times than not when the weeds no longer die as a result of the application of that herbicide. Because of that, the label rates of glyphosate-based herbicide in the beginning was 32 ounces per acre. In Argentina, they would put on 1 to 2 liters per hectare. Today, they are putting on 10 to 20 liters per hectare in Argentina, and the subsequent dramatic and drastic adverse health effects is something that should absolutely not be ignored. Women, as you mentioned, the birth defects, the women that live immediately surrounding the soybean fields where they are spraying the glyphosate-based herbicides on with the airplanes. They're subjected to this contamination, and it's causing severe birth defects in the children that babies that these women are having. In Guatemala and some of the other Central and South American countries where they started using glyphosate-based herbicides as a ripening agent prior to harvesting sugarcane, they're losing from 1 in 4 to 1 in 3 field workers to renal failure. The field workers that are exposed to this glyphosate herbicide are dying at an alarming rate since they started using the glyphosate-based herbicides pre-harvest of harvesting the sugarcane. And again, the industry is distorting the truth in the mode of action and how it works and saying, well, it's non-toxic. Well, it is. That's technically true to a human being because of the mode of action and how it affects it. It doesn't directly affect the person from a toxicity standpoint, but it dramatically harms the microorganisms that we have within our body that we depend upon to be able to digest the food and nurture our body. Glyphosate has also been scientifically proven to be a very strong endocrine disruptor or a chemical that causes severe birth defects. So it's been sadly and badly misrepresented, and the regulatory agencies seemingly want to refuse to look at the new science that is documenting the fact that this is a very toxic product.
Wow. For our listeners that are tuning in late, I'm Bobby Elias. Our name of our show is Let's Create a Better World. I'm speaking to Howard Bligger, who is a speaker, who is a third-generation family farmer, and who's involved with the pig study and this enormous amount. Howard, what you just said about what's going on in Argentina, you've got so many wonderful pieces of information that we need to use to alert and educate the public about what's really going on in our foods. So continue with the study, or there's also a rat study I've heard about. If you want to speak on that, go right ahead, Howard.
Well, first I'd like to follow your comment, which is an excellent one. Education is key. The public is completely and totally unsuspecting of what's going on.
Yes.
There's no labeling on the GMOs in the first place, which, again, the industry had their person in the right regulatory agency at the right time in Washington, D.C., in the beginning when genetically engineered crops, when the FDA made the ruling about GMOs being substantially equivalent, that in essence inhibited the need for any type of safety testing. There was absolutely no science to support that ruling as it was put in place, but a gentleman who is also the food czar in the current administration by the name of Michael Taylor was at the head of the FDA when this substantially equivalent and generally recognized as safe, or GRAS, both of those terms were established in 1992 relative to genetically engineered crops. Well, Mr. Taylor has had a number of differing positions in regulatory agencies in D.C. between 92 and today, but his most notorious career accomplishment is that of being a lawyer for Monsanto, one of the world's largest developers of genetically engineered seed, and also the manufacturer of Roundup herbicide. The safety testing is non-existent. Many of the studies that will be quoted by those on the pro side of this issue are not even published in a scientific journal. Their version of a long-term study is 90 days at the most. There was a study, which you mentioned, conducted on rats. A scientist by the name of Seralini in France, in essence, replicated a study that was conducted by Monsanto on one of the genetically engineered corns that they had submitted for approval and deregulation. Instead of running the study for 90 days, he ran the study for the lifetime of the rat, which is 2 years. 2 years in a rat's life is equivalent to the duration of a human life, 70 to 80 years. The rats that he used in his study were the exact same breed as the rat that Monsanto used in their study for 90 days that supposedly showed this corn was safe. They criticized Seralini for using that rat because they said that rat was prone to developing tumors. That's a true statement, that rat among the breed of rats would be prone, more prone than another breed, to develop tumors. But that rat is the perfect rat to use because that rat is the closest species of rats to that of a human being for the likelihood of developing a tumor in its lifetime. Seralini also included a group that he put the glyphosate residue in the water of the rats. The level of glyphosate that he put in the water is below the legal tolerance that has been established in most all countries throughout the world for glyphosate residue in water, and dramatically below the tolerance level for the amount of glyphosate residue that the regulatory agencies allow to have in the grain feed subsequent food supply throughout the world. This study, which it was designed to be a toxicology study. It was not designed to be a cancer study. Because it was designed to be a toxicology study, he did not use more than 20 rats per group. He found a significant amount of tumors present in the GM corn-fed and glyphosate-fed groups of rats. They were 70 to 80% more likely to develop tumors over their lifetime, and they died 2 to 3 times faster than the conventionally fed and non-glyphosate-fed animals. The one very interesting fact about his study was the development of the tumors began at 120 days. and from 4 to 7 months, from 120 to 210 days, was when the bulk of the tumors began to develop in the rats that developed them. You remember the industry study that supposedly proved the GM corn was safe stopped at 90 days. So they did not do a true long-term study. And this has been documented by, for example, Professor Gallagher from India. She was commissioned by the India Supreme Court to investigate the safety testing that had been conducted on genetically engineered crops from around the world. Well, Professor Gallagher documented the fact that no long-term testing had ever been conducted by an independent testing agency, and the short-term studies that have been conducted by the industry, many of which have showed significant reasons for concern in the warning signs that they received in some of the analysis of the blood work of the rats, all these warning signs have been ignored, and they still have been approved. And thankfully and subsequently, the BT Brinjal was never approved in India as a result of the Gallagher study. But again, this whole thing goes back to the fact there is no safety testing, and right, there's a lot of evidence that would be easy to make a case to say this is about money and control, because the amount of money that's generated by the sale of the seed that's genetically engineered is in the billion-dollar category every single year. That's how much more money the producers that raise the crops have to pay for the seed that's genetically engineered. So the industry that has promoted this technology has a stranglehold on things, and they kind of like the amount of money that they're getting, and they're not going to give it up easily.
That's right. Howard, on the money issue, I really agree with you 100%. That's one of the things on this show we talk about, making this a better world. We need to, these people are just extraordinarily greedy and just selfish, and they're just, I'm sorry to say, they're terrible people. And this is what's going on all over the world in corporations, and how the little people, like myself and other people, we're being left out. But let's get back to another issue as we're winding down our segment. Agent Orange, there's some new information of that coming into our food. Can you tell us about that, Howard, please?
The corn that the USDA has just approved deregulation of is tolerant to 2,4-D. And this is a genetically engineered corn that will be genetically altered to be able to be sprayed with glyphosate and 2,4-D herbicides quite late in the growth of the plant without having an adverse effect to the corn. Well, 2,4-D is part of the ingredient of Agent Orange, which most everyone is familiar with that being used in Vietnam as a defoliant in the jungles. 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. 2,4-5-T contained dioxin. Those three ingredients made up Agent Orange. That's what the USDA has just approved for deregulation to be used in crop production. The insanity of this is multifactorial. Number one, the biggest insane move of it is the 2,4-D will not be effective to control the weeds that are already tolerant and resistant have become super weeds relative to glyphosate-based herbicides. They are promoting something that won't work right out of the gate. Number two, 2,4-D is a very volatile herbicide. It will drift off site with very little help and assistance in the environmental conditions that may be in place when the product is sprayed. Glyphosate is also a volatile product and can easily move off site. So if you put the glyphosate and the 2,4-D together, there's no telling how far or where it will drift and what it will contaminate. We know based on the survey that the U.S. Geological Service did in 2010 and 2011, where they monitored the air, the rain, and the rivers in Iowa and Mississippi, they found significant levels of glyphosate present in the air, in the rain, and in the rivers. Now they're going to increase that amount of toxicity in the environment if this 2,4-D gets approved by the EPA. It is not a good move in any way, shape, or form. The only thing that a knowledgeable person in crop production sees coming relative to the 2,4-D tolerant corn is there will be another increase in the technology fee associated with that seed, and there will be an increase of more chemical used to attempt to control the weeds, and it's not going to work.
Well, Howard, we've got to wind down here. How about if you could give us, we need, as we said earlier, we need to educate the public and the world about what's really going on. And your information is really outstanding, Howard. What a great job and all the great work you're doing. Could you tell our people where they can go to learn more about all these things you're talking about through the website and through any other contact information you'd like to give us? If you could do that now, please.
Well, anyone that wants to access the pig study can go to the gmo.judycarmen website, or gmojudycarmen.org.
How do you spell Judy Carmen?
Judy Carmen, K-U-D-Y-C-A-R-M-A-N.
M-A-N, okay, got it.
M-A-N, Carmen. Mm-hmm. And you can read about the study there. The GMO Free USA is an excellent source on Facebook for information. Just Label It GMO organization in California is an excellent source.
Right.
There are a lot of different sources around the country. The Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance website out of Texas, One Radio out of Texas is another site that's excellent. On the West Coast, Elaine McFadden's radio program, she has a website with excellent information. There's the Organic Consumers Association has a good website, a good source. The Weston A. Price Foundation has information. There are Food and Water Watch. There are a host of excellent sources to go to find out more information about GMOs. All you really need to do is type in GMO in a Google search, and you will have plenty of material to source and educate yourself and share the information that you read and learn with others, because it is dramatically important that we get this information to everyone. I've said many times the only people that need to know about this are the people that eat food.
That's right. How about your website? Could you give that to us just now? And how people can reach you on your email? Could you give us any of that, or how they can reach you?
GMO Judy Carmen.
That's GMO. Okay, GMOJudyCarmen.com or org.
Org.
Okay.
There will be a link to contacting me on that website.
Great. Good. Good. Well, you were just outstanding, Howard, and I want to also thank John Diaz for helping you when you come to Los Angeles, and I know you're going all over the country speaking, and this pig study and these studies and all the terrible things that are happening to people all over the world because of GMO is really bad. Give me just 1 minute, because I've got to change subject here. One last thought minute to say goodbye to our people for now. Howard, 1 minute. Go ahead.
I would, I guess my closing thought would be I look forward to spending time in California and Oregon, Southern California, Northern California, and Southern Oregon the last 2 weeks of January here. I'll be arriving in Orange County the 18th of January and will be there till the 22nd. Then I go up north and I'll be up north till the 31st and then come back down south and do more presentations through the 2nd of February. And then on the 3rd, I'll come back to Iowa. The 5th, I go to Pennsylvania for speaking at a sustainable ag conference out there for 3 days. But I look forward to meeting all the new people on the West Coast. Yes. And, of course, all the friends that I have been fortunate to make in the previous trips I've been out there.
And, Howard, when I see you, I want to sit down with you and John Diaz and let's figure out ways that we can promote you, your work, and all this great information that people don't know. We need to educate people. One more thing, though, John, Howard, you spoke about Orange County and the West Coast. We have a lot of listeners here on Progressive Radio Network in the Eastern Zone, in New York area and all around the Eastern Seaboard. Can you, besides February the 5th in Pennsylvania, are there any other times you're going to be back east in New York or thereabouts?
There's not on the schedule right now. I'm going to be in Ontario prior to going to California, but
Ontario, Canada.
Not anything scheduled on the East Coast other than Pennsylvania. The people in that part of the country, Dr. Kelly Brogan, follow her. She's doing some excellent work in helping people with their improvement of their health and how they eat. She's just outstanding in the work that she's doing. So that's an excellent resource to follow on the East Coast. Dr. Kelly Brogan. She's in New York.
Great. Great. And on the line right now, I believe I have Brett Wilcox. Brett, are you there?
Yes, I am, Bobby.
Say hello to your friend Howard.
Hello, Howard. It's nice to meet you over the phone.
I look forward to meeting you in person when I'm in California.
Thank you, and likewise.
Okay, Howard. Thank you so much, Howard. And we'll speak to you again and keep you posted. And I'm looking forward to talking to you about how we can educate the world on your work. Thank you.
Thank you for helping spread the word with your radio program. It's my pleasure
to be
with
you. You're very welcome. Thank you. All right. Very good. What a great session we had. Now let me introduce our next guest, who you just heard. That's Brett Wilcox. Brett is a speaker, author, and athlete, and he's got a book called We're Monsanto, Feeding the World. What's the last part of that? Little by little? No.
Feeding the World, Lie After Lie.
So the whole title is, We're Monsanto, Feeding the World, Lie After Lie. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct, Bobby.
Excellent. Now, Brett, I just got word, and that's why I got you on here at the last minute to come and speak to our listeners, and I want to have you on again next week, because what you're doing is phenomenal. You're putting together a run across the country. So tell our listeners the details of your run and why you're doing this. I know it's for the awareness on the GMO issue, but where does it start, where does it go through, and where does it finish? And more information, Brett. Go right ahead.
We're starting at Huntington Beach Pier a week from today, January 18th at 11 a.m. We're going to be running up the Santa Ana River Trail. We're going to be staying down south, going across Arizona, New Mexico, before we start cutting up towards St. Louis eventually to head over to Monsanto and then on to Washington, D.C. This started a couple of years ago when my son, we talked about an internet article, and he says, I want to run across the country. And then Prop 37 was a big catalyst for me when I saw how that turned out and all the lies that Monsanto and the big industry pumped into California to get Prop 37 defeated. That really kind of lit a fire under me. And I said, David, that's my son, I said, we really, if we're going to run, this would be an amazing cause to connect to the run.
That's great. So the run is I believe you're doing 18 miles a day, more or less, is what I heard.
Yes, we'll be averaging that. That's the plan.
And you're going to be, you're going to try to get some more runners together. I know you and your son are running, but you have, you're recruiting other people, or what?
We are not actively recruiting large numbers of people to run with us.
Right.
We see this more a family activity, a father and son running across the USA, but we are inviting people to run with us for a few miles or a day or two if they would like to do that. But we want to keep this small. We want to keep this simple. We don't want to have to worry about all the logistics of having 500 people run with us through the desert in New Mexico, for example.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we'll be able to say no to all the people eventually who might want to run with us, and we don't want to say no. But we're not actively recruiting runners to run with us.
That's fine. I understand that. That's all great. It sounds like a wonderful thing that you're doing. I know your son's a runner. I know you're a runner. And you're an athlete, obviously. But I think it'd be great when you're in different cities. And when you, I know that we're on a short little call right here, Brett. But next week, I'd like to have you on for 10 or 15 minutes or more. Let me see how I can squeeze the schedule and change it around. But I would like to make sure I'd like to also speak to you on the side, on our own, about how through my media contacts and my experience, how we can possibly add or help any kind of promotion of what you're doing. And I'd like to speak to you personally on how and what you'd like to say and your whole objective. But if you could speak to that a little bit right now, what's going on with the awareness and why you're doing this, let's get into the deep matter, because we've only got a few minutes left.
Well, every day we see new news items coming out, GM-related, and it's like, wow, the whole country needs to be aware of this and be awake to this. But you and I both know that the vast majority of Americans are still asleep when it comes to the GMO issue. So we feel like by putting the rubber to the road, so to speak, we're going to have a lot of opportunities to speak to a lot of people, be in front of a lot of cameras, and say, yes, we're running across the country, but we're running across for a greater cause, something that is absolutely crucial to the future of the USA as well as the planet.
Wow, that is great. This has to really get out, and I commend you. This is wonderful, going all the way across the country. You must be in great, great shape, Brett, and your son, too.
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to take a rope and just tie it onto my son, and he can pull me. He's the one who's in great shape. He just turned 15, but at the age of 14, he became the cross-country champion in Southeast Alaska in the 3A division.
Southeast Alaska? Is that where you've been living, or
yes,
you were living, or what?
We live in Sitka, Alaska.
Okay, is that where you live now?
Yes.
But you're going to be in Orange County to get this thing started. Why Orange County? Or why Huntington Beach?
We were considering the climate. We're starting in the middle of January. And, of course,
right.
L.A.
Right.
is a friendly place for us in the middle of January. And so we had to start down south.
Good. That's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure. How long do you think it's going to take you to go across the country?
It'll take 6.5 to 7 months to do this.
So, yeah, we need to really promote this, because a lot of small, this would, Brett, this would be an enormous way to educate people about this so much needed issue of genetically engineered foods and how they're destroying all of our foods. I believe you, when you go into certain towns, you're going to be meeting people and talking to them and raising awareness, and hopefully you have some material to hand them. And some websites to tell them about. I'm sure you're going to be doing some of that, right?
We do plan to give presentations, and we're going to be pushing a jogging stroller. We're going to call it a seed stroller. It's going to be packed full of organic and heirloom seeds that are labeled GMO-free USA, donated by Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds. And we're going to be giving those out wherever we go. We're going to be giving them out to the people at Huntington Beach Pier when we start. And I look forward to meeting Howard later in the afternoon on the 18th, where he's giving a presentation. I want to show up there with our seed stroller and our seed packets and pass out seeds. And so that's kind of what we're doing. Johnny Appleseed distributed apple seeds many, many years ago, and we see this as an opportunity to to distribute the good word about organic and heirloom seeds and how that is the direction we need to get back to.
Right. That's a great thought and a great way of doing it. So you'll be giving presentations and help and educating people all along the way. This is extremely remarkable. And I'm sure you're going to be hitting small towns as well as medium to large towns. And have you already set up a few of these cities? And if so, can you tell our audience what cities or which places you might be having some get-togethers?
The best way to answer that question is to go to our website, which is runningthecountry.com. And I posted a recent blog called Running for a GMO-Free USA Route. And on that site, I posted a map, a Google Maps map, showing exactly where we plan to go. And you can zoom right into the street level to see the streets that we'll be running on. But we're going to hit LA, and then we're going across kind of a Route 66 route, going through Arizona, New Mexico, heading up to Wichita, Kansas, and then heading over to St. Louis, and then we've got Cincinnati, Columbus, Ohio, Cincinnati, and so I forget them off the top of my head. But
that's all right. That's all right. So can you say that website again?
Runningthecountry.com.
And there's another website I think you mentioned, or did you?
I would love to mention our Indiegogo campaign that is running right now. We're gathering funds to help us get across the country. This is a very expensive venture, and we've got a campaign at Indiegogo.com, and the campaign name is Running for a GMO-Free USA. You can type that into the search bar, or just type in GMO, and that'll take you to our campaign. We've got an amazing video out there that a friend and professional videographer put together, and you'll get a good picture of who we are and why we're running it. And if you feel inspired, we would love to receive your donations in there. We promise that we'll make good use of those funds.
I will try to get the word out to other media, such as, you know, this radio show is owned by Gary Null. I want to let his office know what you're doing. Gary Null is heard by more people. His show is heard by more people than any show, including AM and FM. And I will talk to him about this, about what you're doing. If I can't get him, because he's traveling all the time, I'll get his associates and get the word out. And I will also call you back and talk to you more. And I want to find out where you're going to be in Los Angeles so I can meet you when you're making your stop next Saturday. But any other final closing thoughts, and then give your contact information again slowly and clearly, Brett. Would you?
I just want to honor the people in California who have been leading this charge for a long time now. I'm kind of a latecomer. When I was up in Sitka, Alaska, watching Prop 37 unfold, there were a lot of good people in California who were at the forefront, leading the battle, leading the charge. And I honor all of you who have been doing this. You know, as we run across the country, we get kind of celebrity star status for doing this. But you guys are the guys that have been leading this battle, and I really appreciate you. We are standing on your shoulders. Again, our website is runningthecountry.com, and there's our Indiegogo campaign, and we would love to hear from you. My email address is there at runningthecountry.com, and I would love to hear from you via email.
Let's support Brett, everyone, please. Brett will be on again next week on this show. We're on every Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern time, so be sure to tune in next week. But the only problem is next week you're going to be starting your run at 11 o'clock. What I probably need to go is go down to Huntington Beach and interview you in person.
Boy, that would be wonderful if you were there, Bobby.
If I can do that, at least. And then also I want you to let more people know about this show. I'll speak to you about that off the air a little more in a little while, if you don't mind.
That sounds great.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on. Great cause. Great work you're doing. We commend you totally.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good enough. All right. Let's wind down the show now. We've only got a few minutes left. We're going to hear a little more of that song, Imagine, by John Lennon at the very end of the show. But let me first just tell you that this is Let's Create a Better World. This is Healthy Aging. We are on every week Saturday. We're going to have, in the next few weeks, we're going to have some really great shows with reflexology next week. And also, the young man that just spoke, Brett Wilcox will be on to speak more about the run and more in depth. We're going to have Ending All Wars. We have a lot of, let's see other show we have. I'm trying to look at my notes here. Oh, yeah, Raw Food. So on the 18th, Reflexology and Brett will be speaking. Then on the 25th, Raw Food. And then we're going to speak about some major issues in the raw food field. On February the 1st, hopefully we have End All Wars, a new group that's really wants to do that very subject, end all the wars in the country. So let me thank everybody for being on the show. We're on iTunes. If you like the show, rate us on iTunes. We're on the archives. Make sure you hear our, also, going through my notes here, I want to thank all the people that helped put this show together. I want to thank Jason in New York, the producer of the show. I want to thank Jimmy D, here is the producer in Los Angeles. I want to thank Stuart Hassel, the associate producer. I want to thank the speaker that today we had two people on, Howard Rigger and also Brett Wilcox. And I want to thank Melissa, our engineer. Melissa, I'm sure she's listening right now. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning into the show. If you like our show, please rate us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us. You can see us on Paris in the archives. Tell your friends they can hear this show and all shows on PRN at this number I'm going to give you, area 619-550-0869. Again, thank you, everyone, and let's hear our song, Imagine.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine no possessions.